Rye and Jiri at Lunga, Lwani under two moons, the River Tamarck in winter. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Seventh Rule with Siroc Lofton.
All right, you tried for it. Hello.
My name is Temba. My arms are wide open. No, my name is Ryan T. Husk, and today we're doing a review, you guessed it, of Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 5, Episode 2. Darmok, story by Philip Lazebnik and Joe Manosky, teleplay by Joe Manosky. This was directed by Weinrich Kolbe, and the date was September 28th, 1991. Where were you? How you doing today, Siroc?
I'm great. I love those dates, you know.
You know, just now that popped in my head, I think this is right around a time where like 8 to 10 of the best rock albums all dropped within like a couple months of each other towards the fall of 91. I'll have to check that out. But like crazy ones like Pearl Jam 10, Nirvana Nevermind, Metallica Black, Guns N' Roses Use Your Illusion 1 and 2. Like just like everything fell at the same time and I think in like fall of 91. Anyway, everybody,
Wow.
please make sure to like this video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell icon for notifications. If you're listening in, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. We'd really appreciate that. And visit us on patreon.com/the7th rule to be part of all of the fun. So, Siroc, you've heard us mention this episode so many times. There's Kayshan the Tamarian on Lower Decks that's always talking nonsense. Now you finally get the jokes. What do you think of this episode?
It was interesting. It had me kind of, it was interesting. I was first a little bit like trying to figure out the puzzle too. And I thought that they should have went to the computer faster than they did in this story. 'Cause I'm figuring like if you're going to meet with a delegation, be talking about some treaties or whatnot, there should be way more background than what we saw in that opening kind of executive meet staff meeting with Data and Worf and Picard, Riker and Troy. So I don't know, it just felt like at the very least the Federation with their intelligence gathering and you know how big of an entity it is. At the very least, it would be in the profile of these Temerians that communication is difficult and that we don't have that much knowledge about it, you know, because it came as a surprise to them. That's what I'm saying. I can't hear you. You're muted.
Sorry, all we got was they said that they've seen Temerian ships for 100 years and they were incomprehensible. But they didn't say like what they talk like or what, you know, what, because to be honest, it didn't seem like it was that difficult to understand what, you know, because they'd be like, they would celebrate and be like, Temba, his eyes opened or whatever, you know, something like that. I mean, of course, you need to learn about their history to understand it better, but you could tell when they were happy or when they were sad or when they were encouraging something. So,
Yeah, and you know, there's certain communication that's nonverbal. I've done a lot of traveling, you know, just in places where I don't speak the language. And it's you can still find out where the bathroom is.
yep.
Like people know you need to use the
What's the
bathroom.
nonverbal communication you do, Siroc, to let them know
You
you got to
walk
go
up there and
pee?
you grab your stomach, you're hopping around like this, you know. There's ways to it's just like a it's nonverbal communication is actually one of the biggest ways we do communicate.
Don't know if you grab your stomach, but Geordi was talking about the D region. I don't know if you heard that, but he kept saying,
What did he say?
He said, there's a scattering layer is on the upper D region, you know, and they kept talking about the D because it was like the E region, and then they were really focused on,
Oh yeah.
hyper focused on the D region. But anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's a Riker episode, so
Right. So I do want to say real quick an update on that 1991. seven legendary 90s rock albums within 44 days of each other. Starting from August 12th, 1991 to the end of September, there was Metallica, Black, Pearl Jam 10, Guns N' Roses, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, Red Hot Chili Peppers, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Soundgarden, Bad Motorfinger, and Nirvana, Nevermind. So that's like,
Wow.
those are albums that like
44 days.
that changed the face of rock basically within 44 days of each other.
Yeah,
Anyway.
that's crazy. That's a month and a half of madness. If you're a fan of that genre of music, then you're going to be like overload, sensory overload, I guess, right? What did
Yeah.
you think was the best that came out of that?
Oh, out of that.
Yeah, what is the best, your favorite, let's say top three in ranking?
It's really tough because not to deviate too much, but I've already kind of done that. For me, I think there are, I would say, objectively, not my favorite necessarily, but objectively, I would say the best album might have was Pearl Jam 10 to come out of that. Pearl Jam 10, Nirvana, Nevermind, Guns N' Roses, Black, from Metallica. I mean, the only two that are like on a lower level, I think, are Soundgarden and Red Hot Chili Peppers to me. Otherwise, the others are like super upper echelon. I know I'm pissing people off with that answer, but it's
Yeah,
Pearl
that's how
Jam
you
10
feel.
is a perfect album. Anyway.
So you've got the Nirvana at number two on that list.
Objectively, like how much, I mean, it changed the face of music, so it should be number one for its influence. Personally, my
Yeah.
favorite band is Guns N' Roses. So if you're talking about my
Okay.
favorite album, so that's why I'm like, I'm so
Yeah.
conflicted by
You're
this
like,
because I'm like, it's
Yeah, that's why
my
you keep saying
favorite.
objectively. You're like, for what objection?
Yeah, it's tough
Yeah,
to say.
okay.
It's really tough because those are
Yeah.
behemoths in the music industry, those albums. Anyway. So sorry to anybody that doesn't care. And anybody that does, leave us comments below. Tell us which one of those seven do you think
Yeah.
is your favorite and objectively the best. So back to this.
Yeah.
What do you think, Strzok? Do you have one?
No, I don't have one, and I'm going to stay out of the conversation.
Yeah,
Stay out of the line of fire on that one.
I mean, Nirvana changed the face of all of music with that album. I mean, they just completely took a right turn for a few years. But anyway,
Yeah, not just music, but like culture in general. There was a big cultural shift in just how
flannels.
people dressed. Yeah, it was like a pretty big shift.
So that was this time of this episode. So while they're doing that, we've
Yeah.
got Paul Winfield killing it in this role. Like, this was a little bit like Enemy Mine too, which I think is one of, the best sci-fi movies ever, certainly one of my favorites. And it had a little bit of Enemy Mine to it. And I thought that Paul Winfield did a lot with his expressions, but especially with his eyes, because, I mean, when he read for the role and
Yeah.
when he read the script, he was like, wait, I have to memorize all of these things. He has to learn how to pronounce them all and deliver them, obviously as if there's a powerful meaning behind it. But I couldn't help but think, man, that's a tough acting gig.
I'm glad you brought him up because I kept saying to myself, I know this actor, like I know this actor. And I'm like, I know who it is. And I just had to keep listening to his voice and keep listening. I don't like to cheat myself and read the credits. So I was just trying to see if I can guess. But yeah, Paul Winfield's one great actor. I thought he was fantastic in this episode, really carried it. There were moments there where a lot long stretches in this episode where there was actually no words. Where it was Picard just standing there, shivering and looking over and Paul Winfield's over there, curled up and, grabbing his knife or, and just no words, just all visuals. And it takes a lot in order for that to be working on television. First, for large stretches of 30 seconds to a minute with no words, it means something else captivating is happening on the camera that's keeping your attention. And I think that in those stretches, the director picked nice shots. I thought the moments accentuated the miscommunication between them and the awkwardness between them. I was thinking to myself, though, like, Picard, why don't you just walk over to the fire and grab your own piece of wood and, light it up instead of standing there shivering to death? Like you're not making a threatening motion by walking over with a branch and lighting it on fire so you can walk it back over to your side of the woods,
Yeah, I think Picard
But
was waiting for, he was hoping the guy would extend the, fire olive branch or whatever.
yeah.
That's his way. His way is like, I'm gonna let him come to me. I'm sure cats would love him. Because cats don't want you to go to them. They want you to sit there and they kind of assess you and then they go, all right, you're cool. I'll go to you. So maybe he was trying to do that. But to your point about 30 seconds to a minute of no dialogue, you need to have faith in your actors. Because if those actors aren't giving something on screen that keeps it, and because I mean, you could have beautiful shots, which are great. You could have a lot of subtext already, you could have already done the work ahead of time for people to know what's going on. But really, people are still watching the actors. And you need to be able to trust that these actors can carry no dialogue and keep it interesting.
And they did. I mean, you got Patrick Stewart on one end of there, and you got Paul Winfield, who did a fantastic job in this episode. Not just how he was communicating with Picard, but I felt like how he was communicating with his own crewmen. We didn't know what they were saying to each other, but he was talking to his own crewmen in a way, as if they all understood. And I thought that was also communicated well as with the performance, the crew, his crew, the Temerian crew on that ship seemed to have their little spat and their little argument, and he was trying to say, no, we're going to do it like this and like this. And meanwhile, everybody in the Enterprise is like, I don't know what the hell's going on. So it was an interesting episode. It kept my attention, I don't know how many times I've heard Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra at conventions. It's or people wearing the t-shirts with it, and I'm like, one day I'm gonna know what the hell they're talking about.
What I had forgotten was just how many of these gibberish lines that were or gibberish to us. We all remember, Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra. We remember Temba, his arms wide. We remember what's the other one that's
Shaka when the
Shaka, when the
walls
walls
fell.
fell. Yeah, that one is pretty good. Shaka
I like
Zulu,
that
when the
one.
walls, Shaka Khan.
Yeah.
Also, there was one where he said Kira at
Yeah.
Bashir. And I got the subtitles on because I like to know exactly what people are saying,
It's spelled the KIRA, right?
and Bashi. So it's basically Kira and Bashir minus one letter.
I saw that.
So
It
that was
said
kind of,
Kira at Bashir,
yeah. And this is when Deep Space Nine must have been in development,
right? Oh, maybe that was a little
I feel I don't
an
see how
Easter egg.
I don't know how it couldn't have been, but I'd never noticed
Yeah,
that before.
it did say Kira at Bashir. Bashir?
Yeah,
Bashir?
Bashi.
Yeah.
Bashi.
Yeah, that was close.
Yeah.
That was close because there we did get Akira at Bashir. Actually did happen. But yeah, that was interesting. Those other ones, so you said you didn't realize how many gibberish lines there were in this?
Yeah, there were a whole bunch, and everybody stay tuned for the trivioids to hear a lot of them, but there are more than I remembered because we just remember like the three main ones. But that's
Yeah.
just what made Paul Winfield's performance so good is that he had so many weird ass lines, but he delivered them with so much gusto. And he came off as a character with a lot of heart. How do you come off with so much heart? Right? We felt like we knew his soul. We felt like we knew his heart. We felt like we could say, He was a good man and he was passionate about what do we never even understood a word he said, yet somehow we feel like we're like, oh man, we lost a good man today. That was
We
a
lost a good man.
he was a good guy.
Yeah, without any words. I mean, without words that we can understand, you know. But and the very significant moments that I thought stood out in regards to that. For example, when they are first on the planet, when they first arrive on that planet that's behind you or wherever that is, location filming, Picard's standing there unarmed, and he's standing there with two knives in his hand. So the visually, it's like, oh, this guy is trying to challenge him to a duel or a fight, or he wants to just fight him or attack him with the advantage, right? So we weren't sure. There's two knives in his hand. Is this an attack, or is he going to offer him a knife and say, now let's me and you fight? So right there, we're given as the audience a question to try to solve what's going on here visually. And I thought he did a great job of gaining, this is where I think he gained my trust, is when he was like, Darmok and Jalad at the Nagra, and he put the knives back in, like
This
I guess this
dummy,
is gonna be this is gonna be a lot more longer than I thought. This idiot can't figure out what's going on. And that's when I was like, all right, this guy's not that bad. Like he's frustrated, you know what I mean, as opposed to aggressive. It was like, oh man, this is not going to be go well, because this guy, he doesn't know what the hell we're here for, or what's going on here. So I like that. I thought that was well done in the performance.
You mentioned the location. Well, I've
Yeah.
got a whole big juicy goody on the location also saved up for the second
Ooh.
segment here, which should be, well, maybe we should go into the location. You know what? Yeah,
Yeah.
let's do it. Why
I mean,
tease
that's an
it?
outdoor film. I didn't know where it was, but it did. I
It was
mean,
Griffith
anytime they
Park.
film, was it? Okay, so up in Griffith
Yeah.
Park.
It was Griffith Park, but here's what's cool about it. Online, check this out. So here you are, Siroc. You would shoot at Paramount Studios right here, right? Gower and Melrose. This is where Tim Russ likes to play right here, his band. We got 101. See Thomas Guide. Oh, those Thomas Guides. I never
Oh,
had to use one of
the
those. I'm so glad I didn't. But
Thomas
so
guy.
look at this. Griffith Park up here, right? Equipment parking, cast and crew parking. We've parked right here when we went to Griffith Park for like the Voyager dock things, right? This is exactly where we parked. And then you hike up here, right? And then there's the Batman
I think you
cave.
got your car broken into when we parked there.
I definitely did, and I was like, I don't want to be a downer, but I remember I was like, when I was doing this with it, I was like, I got my car broken into literally right here. Money just taken right anyway.
Unbelievable.
So you remember the so
I remember it.
Bronson Caves, aka the Batman Cave, right here. And so all of these, and it says like from the studio, it's got all these directions, but this is a lot of fun, right? So what's cool about this too, where does it have the date? Yeah, July. Oof, why do they always do Griffith Park in the middle of summer? July 23rd, 1991. I bet it was hot and it was a Tuesday. Darmok, Next Generation, production number. So this is a lot of fun. That's cool. But what was cool about watching this episode in that regard was that since I knew it was at Griffith Park, I was looking around and recognizing certain parts, from when we've been there in the
Really?
past. Like, I mean, I didn't see the cave. I know they definitely used the Batman cave in a season 7 episode and maybe others. But yeah, you could definitely recognize like, there's not a ton of area that you can use in that, right? You shot it with the Battle of whatever that one was, right? The siege. Oh,
Yeah,
nor
I
the
think
battle
Nor the
to the
Battle for the
strong.
Strong.
That's what it was. Yeah.
We filmed up there. What's funny about that map is how it's hand drawn. That was the first thing that jumps out to me. It's like, somebody on production hand drew that map right there, put the mountains in there and everything. And I thought that was kind of fun. But the cave stuff, you mentioned the cave. I don't think that was done at the Bronson stuff. I think that was done on the sound stage, right? The cave stuff.
What I mean is, like, there's the Batman cave, right? You see there's a Batman cave there. And a lot of times they'll use it as an exit, like an exterior shot, and you watch them
Right.
walking out of the caves, you know,
Right.
and that's like the exit. But when they're in the cave, that's all on the sound stages.
So Bronson, So that was another thing that I kind of noticed was it looked like this episode had a high production value. Like they had to do location film, they had to do a lot of exteriors, a lot of special effects stuff. There was the shuttlecraft stuff with Worf on that little runabout for a second.
Yeah, with
There was a
Ensign Kellogg. So we also had a few familiar faces too. We had Ensign Kellogg again, who was
Ensign Kellogg.
on the shuttlecraft with Worf. Remember, she's like the tall redhead. We keep seeing her. We just keep seeing her. I think the actress's name is Cameron. No last name. She just goes by Cameron. That's it. So that's Ensign Kellogg. And we also saw the helms person. What was her name? Ensign Gates. We've seen her. Remember,
Is that the black woman?
she keeps popping up. We keep seeing her in a bunch of episodes. So it was great to see her again.
But her hair was different this time. It looked like Ensign Gates. She had a little bob top. Ensign Gate. That's the black woman, right? The black woman that was sitting next to Data at the helm.
Yep, exactly. I'll show you her right now. Here she is.
She jumped out at me.
She's been in a bunch of episodes. This is her.
Yeah, there she goes.
She's
That's my sci-fi sister right
kind of
there.
got a Michael Jackson nose, or a Janet Jackson even nose, you know,
Yeah,
right?
she's a sci-fi sister. Popped up. I wonder where she's what she's doing.
But she's in a bunch of these episodes, and you know, it's always a bummer when we see somebody in one episode, or sometimes it's two back-to-back episodes, and then we never see them again. It's like, stop introducing a character that we get interested in, and then we don't ever get to see them again. But her, she got some steady work from this. I don't remember how many episodes it was, but I'll check. It's just always good to see.
Well, she was featured prominently in this one. She stood out to me. I was like, oh, there she goes. There she is.
Her name is Joyce Robinson. Joyce
Joyce Robinson.
Robinson. And let me see, how many episodes did she do? I know we checked this once before. Her headshot kind of reminds me of Lisa Turtle from Saved by the Bell.
From Saved by the Bell, yeah, I kind of get Saved by the Bell vibes from her. Yeah, she could definitely pass as her mom in like an
So
episode.
she's done 48 Next Generation episodes.
Damn.
So you're going to be seeing a lot of her, I think. I felt like an 80s cartoon, 80s TV show. You're going to be seeing a lot of her. She's going to be in like 10 or 12 episodes just this season. So anyway, lots of good
Okay,
stuff there.
get it, girl. I would love to see, maybe if we can get her on the show and contact her and
That'd
talk
be
with her, because
awesome.
I want to, see what it was like for her. Should
Okay,
try.
so, hey, tell you what, we also have another huge guest star. Huge guest star that we will talk about on the other side. We'll be right back on The Seventh Rule.
Ich bin Charissa und meine Empfehlung an alle Entrepreneure: Startet mit Shopify erfolgreich durch. Ich verwende Shopify schon seit dem ersten Tag und die Plattform macht mir nie Probleme. Ich habe viele Probleme, aber die Plattform ist nie eins davon. Ich habe das Gefühl, dass Shopify ihre Plattform kontinuierlich optimiert. Alles ist super einfach integrier- und verlinkbar. Und die Zeit und das Geld, das ich dadurch spare, kann ich anderweitig investieren. Vor allem in Wachstum.
Jetzt kostenlos testen auf shopify.de.
Hey everybody, welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Sirach, the popcorn eater Lofton.
Hello.
Here are the trivioids of the week. Knock on wood. Rai and Jiri at Lunga Lawani under two moons, Ubaya at crossroads at Lunga. Lunga, her sky gray, the river Tamark in winter. Shaka when the walls fell, Mirab, his sails unfurled. Darmok and Jalata Tanagra. Kiteo, his eyes closed. Kadir beneath Momete. Temba, his arms wide. Uzani, his army at Lashmir. Uzani, his army with fists open and with fists closed. Sokath, his eyes uncovered. Kailash, when it rises. Kiazi's children, their faces wet. The beast at Tanagra. Kalimas at Bahar. And Kira at Bashi. Okay, that's... Respect to Paul Winfield for getting those. Jeez. Wow.
That's pretty remarkable.
There were more too, but I was like, I can't do all these. I'm gonna die. So here was the big name. We were introduced to, I believe it was Ensign Leffler. Ensign Leffler. She was the lady with Geordi in engineering. Let me see. Yeah, Ensign.
Oh, yeah.
Her name is Ensign Robin Leffler. And she's in another episode later on in this season, so where we get to know her a little bit better. And she is played by Ashley Judd, the big-time actress Ashley Judd.
Yeah. I thought I recognized her.
Yeah. There's a lot of people in this series where it's like you see them kind of before they got big, you know?
That's funny because I was like a Leffler and LaForge sitting in a tree.
Not doing a damn thing as usual.
Programming something. Not doing a damn thing as usual. Yeah, she was very beautiful. I was like, LaForge, what are you doing, man? You got somebody who's really hot here, and I don't see you acting nervous. It's crazy.
That's true. And, you know, this is going to be just another character that we're introduced to for one episode or for two episodes and then gone forever. And it's just so annoying that this keeps happening. I don't know. I would love to hear the behind-the-scenes story as to why they kept introducing these characters and being like, all right, we're giving you a name, we're giving you a storyline, here we go. And then we never see them again. So I don't know what the deal is.
Well, Ashley Judd kind of had a career that was, that kind of took off after.
She did fine.
Yeah, she did pretty good for herself. Did you notice that Riker was a little bit of a jerk in this episode? Just on a slight tinge of jerkness.
Impatient,
yeah. And it's like, I felt like when Data comes and says, you know, we could check the computer and see if we can scan the database for, you know, and he was like, yes, do it. Troy, help him. I want something by 0900 out. The way he said it was like, yo, bro, chill out. Like, you act like you gave us these orders and we didn't do it. You're just now launching them. And you're acting as if that you've been let down somehow by the crew for not acting quick enough. You know what I mean? The tone was there. And if you look at Troy's face, when it kind of looked in there as a close-up on her after, she was like, all right, like, what's your problem?
Yeah, and that usually something like that is fine if they explain it later. Like if they say, hey, oh, he was just like that because he was overly stressed, or, you know, she goes, Will, you're really taking this hard. And he says, well, Captain Picard's missing. How do you expect me to, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
But it was a little bit like, okay, I guess Riker is kind of, his character is evolving and he's getting more and more gruff. You know, before he was kind of like the nice first officer and Picard was the tough guy.
Yeah.
And then Picard now is like the ambassador, you know, he's the diplomat. He's the nice guy, and Riker's being more of the tough guy, more of the gruff.
He was a little bit gruffy, and it wasn't just in that scene with Data and Troy. It went on later on to, Oh, when he was talking to Jordy, when LaFleur and LaForge were there, you know? And I'm like, why'd they give him the same name? You know, LaFleur, LaForge. Like, it's too close to me, you know? But he says, Jordy, I need that deflector ray, you know, back to that D, going back to that D. I need that.
I need that on the D region.
I need you to examine the D region. And so he starts yelling at him, right? And then he says to him, he's like, sir, that's not, you know, Jordy's like, that's not possible, what you just asked. Mm-hmm. There was something he requested. He's like, sir, that's not going to happen. I could just tell you that. And his response was, I don't want to hear that. You know what I mean? It was just like, I don't want to hear that. And it was a little bit abrasive. Once again, going back to this Riker, who really has a charm when he wants to have charm. You know what I mean? He's really totally one of the best at it, right? But it seemed like he was trying to be a little, you know, tough on the crew for really, I didn't see the necessity for it. They're working together to solve this problem. It's not like, what the hell are you guys doing? I need this day, you know, hurry up and get me one of those, you know. It's like,
yeah, he was pissed. Well, he was pissed. You know, some of it works for comedy. Like when he's talking with Worf and he says something like, Mr. Worf, close a channel. And Worf goes, gladly, sir. Like they're both yeah, like, I am sick of these guys. I think maybe they were trying to show like, oh man, I am so sick of these guys. But like usually Worf is enough to show us that we're tired of these people, you know, but now there are two of them. I noticed it too. Like when he's talking with them and he kind of has like this scowl and he's like, so yeah, I wonder what's going on. I wonder if we're going to see more of this throughout the season of just kind of Riker taking a different kind of turn of just being like gruff, kind of impatient, you know, kind of being a little more Worfy.
Yeah, I just thought, you know, because he showed signs of the old Riker in the very flash moment there when he was saying he was basically using his logic to deduce why he didn't think they were a threat. And he was like, well, they wouldn't have done this if they were trying to attack, you know, and that's the Riker I was used to, like the more thoughtful kind of, you know what I mean? Like reasonable, less agitated at the crew. I don't mind him being agitated at the Klingons or whoever the hell she's dealing with, because we've seen him do that when, you know, for example, when he served on that Klingon ship, right? He had that kind of edge in that little attitude when he was serving as the first officer on the Klingon ship.
Because he had to, yeah.
He had to. And then we expect him to have that with the crew, his crew. But with this crew, you're yelling at Troy. He's like, you know, do it. And want something done by an 0900. And she's like, all right, bro.
You know, speaking of Troy, when she was talking to Data, and they were talking about linguistics and stuff. And Data says, he says, I've encountered, you know, whatever the number was, over 1,000 non-human races. And I've been able to communicate with all of them or something like that. And it was just a weird thing to say to somebody who's non-human. Troy, well, I guess she's half human. But it was just kind of weird where it's almost like he's like, man, I've met like 1,000 aliens. And she's like, I am one. Like I'm literally right here. I don't know. I just thought that was like a slightly weird thing, but I guess she's half human, so maybe that's not as much of a thing. But here's something I also noticed.
Well, the line was set up before that with a little bit of a, like she said, you know, with our Starfleet communicators, with our universal translators, and with all of the aliens we've ever encountered, we still can't even say hello to these people. And his response was, you know, well, I've encountered 1,754, you know, non-human races during my tenure in Starfleet. And I was okay with it. I thought it was funny, you know, but I get where you're coming from on that, too.
That's just, me nitpicking a little too much, maybe, but here was something that was very fun. Captain Picard, to my knowledge, got his very first Kirk shirt slash. You know, like the slashed shirt. And I was like, whoa, I hadn't noticed that before. I was like, whoa, Picard got a Kirk shirt slash or rip or tear or whatever like that. So that was very sexy.
I did see that. I wonder where he got it from, fighting that alien,
The
the predator
entity,
alien.
yeah.
But I noticed a different wardrobe aspect of Picard, and then that was the jacket that
There
he
it
wears.
is. I wanted to ask you about that. What did you think of that jacket, of that brand spanking new jacket?
Yeah, I had mixed feelings about it. So on one hand, I do think it looks great and it's well tailored. But the other hand, I have in my head having an open jacket that's not zipped up all the way is too casual for my own thoughts on Starfleet. You know what I mean? Like I don't want to see somebody walking up on the bridge with their zipper done undone and their jacket flying around like they're the Fonz and stuff. Like, bro, this is a workplace environment. We've got, you can't just be out here looking like that. So it was I had mixed feelings.
Yeah, now also I th what it looks like, it's kind of like,
Suede, right?
yeah, suede or velour or something like, yeah, maybe crushed suede, I don't know what it's called, but yeah, that's what it looks like to me. And I think it'd be a fun thing to cosplay. I've seen some people with that Picard jacket, and I believe this is the only, yeah, it is suede, it says. I believe it is the only episode that he wears it in.
Really?
Isn't that weird? Like they just
That's weird.
introduced a new uniform for him for one episode, and then we're like, eh, never mind.
I wonder if that has anything to do with the location shot.
I mean, it was July. He was probably pretty hot in that jacket.
I know he's
Miserable.
hot. And yeah, I know, but I mean, it is suede, so it's lighter than leather a little bit. So, and then the art alternative is his captain's uniform, and I think that's wool. So, if you had a choice between wool and suede, I think I'd choose suede.
Wool. Oh.
So, I wonder if they made that just because they knew they wanted him in the captain's looking stuff, but they knew that maybe the wool would be too. Because you have to wear a turtleneck underneath the wool too, right? If you're
Yeah.
going to be wearing the captain stuff.
Yeah, they got all kinds of stuff. I've worn that before. And some of them, they have like the under turtleneck and some don't. This one's got an under turtleneck for the jacket. It had like the jacket and then like the weird grayish, purplish undershirt, I guess. Pull
But
this up.
yeah, I don't know why they did that a one on a one off. It's interesting. I would love to hear the. There it is. It's actually closer to how Sisko's
Yeah, uniform
uniform was a little
with like the
bit.
gray shoulders.
Gray shoulders, yeah.
It's a bummer. It would have been fun to see it in different, like it would have been fun to know a reason, like, oh, they wear this on away missions, or oh, he wears this on first contact, or you know, anything like that that would make sense that they could use. But I don't know. I thought
Well, I thought
you.
I thought it was the diplomacy of meeting the Temerians. That's what I put it as. Like these are dress, like the dresses, like a version of the dress uniforms. That's what my head was. My head can.
So this is why I thought you would like this episode, not just because of all the silliness and all the jokes and all the memes, but because It dealt in historical stories, right? You always know so many of these historical stories. At the end, Picard was reading Homeric hymns, which was fun. Shout out to our pal Homer Frizzell and his Homeric hymns.
Hymns.
But I was wondering if you had seen or felt or thought of any correlated stories to this, because Picard kind of brought one up, and it just seemed like a Sarak kind of episode with these old historic stories and these legends and things like that, but I couldn't connect it to anything I had heard or read in the past.
Yeah, well, I did enjoy the Gilgamesh story, it's a Sumerian story, so it's actually, pretty old story. I thought that Star Trek did its consistent kind of thing of drawing from allegory, drawing from historical references. We've seen that in the original series when they had Apollo, I think, or was it Apollo that we saw, one of the Greek gods? You've got Sumerian, wasn't
Oh,
it?
it was in this original series. I think it was like,
The original series. Was it
yeah, Apollo
Zeus?
was mentioned, but I think it was Zeus's granddaughter or something. No, daughter. See, I can't even remember. Maybe it was
Yeah,
Apollo. I can't keep track anymore. There was
it was when
there
he
was
became
Zeus's a
made himself a
granddaughter. Zeus's
giant.
granddaughter was in Lower Decks. But yeah, the giant played by Michael Forrest. Remind us in the live chat, everybody.
But still, they're borrowing from mythology on that. Here they're borrowing from the Sumerian mythology and the story of Gilgamesh. I thought even the idea of this episode slightly borrowed from other episodes of Star Trek, which was like the episode of Babel, where everybody was speaking weirdly. I think Deep Space Nine did an episode where everybody was speaking in ways that no one could understand each other. And so that is the story of the biblical story of Babel, kind of one of those communication slash language barrier stories. And this is an expression of that. I thought on Deep Space Nine we saw the same thing with nobody could understand each other. They were all speaking in weird ways. But
Oh yeah, there was an episode like that. You're right. And yeah, the guy was Apollo, by the way, in that old original series episode. Yeah, no, you're right. In Deep Space Nine, there was something like that too, where people just weren't making sense. And then there was all I'm also reminded of the one where Bashir is inhabited by some creature or something like that. And Sid has to do like a funny voice. Yes,
oh yeah.
that's
Yeah, that was a whole other episode. No, I'm talking about the one where everybody was like talking, but it didn't make sense. Shoes wet,
Right.
hair, you know.
I remember that one.
If I'm not mistaken, it was Babel, because that's the logical, title for that episode. But this is in the theme of what Star Trek does. This was a Joe Manosky script. Joe has done a great job on this show of writing a lot of great, memorable episodes. You got to
He
give him
is
credit for that.
all over the place. You're right. Babel is the episode where people are unable to speak. Good knowledge. But yeah, you're right. It makes sense based on the. I mean, if there's an episode called Babel, there's a good chance it's that one.
It's a good chance. That's what I'm saying. And this is a Babel episode. This is the next generation's Babel, right? Instead of the crew, it's between two parties, but it's still the same kind of, what the hell are we talking? Like, how do we communicate with each other? How do we figure this language barrier out?
Yeah, this is one of the most famous episodes in Star Trek history, honestly. I mean, you've seen the shirts, you've heard the quotes. There's even a beverage called a Temerian Sunset, or is it Sumerian Sun? I think it's Temerian Sunset. But these are the only two times we ever see Temerians. This one episode, and then also in Lower Decks with Kayshan. But other than that, that's it. It'd be cool to see more of them. Hey, let's talk about
Yeah.
the home run of the episode today. Got a lot of options. Mr. Manosky, we got Rick Colby, Picard, and Paul Winfield. We've got Ashley Judd. We've got Ensign Gates. We had a Chief O'Brien sighting. Who gets today's home run of the episode? We got Riker being a caveman.
Yeah. Episode home run goes to Sir Patrick Stewart. Knocked it out of the park. I thought he really held this episode, made it make sense. I love the way he was figuring things out. And then I think the reason what made it over the top over Paul Winfield for me, even though I think Paul gets a good honorable mention, what really takes it over the top for me was the final scene where Picard is communicating with the remainder of that Temerian crew.
Beautiful.
And I thought that was a beautiful scene. And I thought it was also closed out well, the final shot of Picard looking out of the window, ceremoniously making those hand gestures. So, it's not even really that difficult for me to say. Patrick Stewart carried this episode, made it great.
Great one. I'm going to agree with you, but I'm going to lean into Paul Winfield because it's his only time on the show, and it's a really hard thing to do, as we know, to come in, you know, as a first timer, and he really gave it his all. I mean, he could have just, I'm not going to say he could have phoned it in, but you could play the character well and the story speaks for itself and everything's fine. But he really put in a lot of love. It's almost as if he was like, I really like this story, or I really like, he was trying to convey more than just being an alien of the week, you know, or whatever. And so he did an amazing job. Really happy about that.
No arguments here.
And he's forever remembered for it. Mr. Paul Winfield gets today's home run of the episode for me. Here are some other people that have been hit by a pitch in the past, as Walter would say. Their names are Dr. Anne-Marie Seagull, Eve England, out in Wales, Yvette Blackman, Tom, TJ Jackson, Bay out in Missouri, Titus Muller, Dr. Muhammad Noor, Anil O. Palat, Joe Balsarati, Mike Gu, and Dr. Stephanie Baker, Carrie Schwent, Faith Howell, Edward Foltz, the Matt Boardman, Chris McGee, he's a Dark Lord, Justin Weir, Jake Barrett, Henry Unger, Allison Leach Hyde, Julie Manasfi, Jed Thompson, Dr. Susan V. Gruner, Glenn Iverson, Dave Gregory, Chris Sternett, Greg K. Wickstrom out in Hawaii, Cassandra Gerard, Chuck A., and of course, Jason Oaken and Chris Garris. Everybody stick around. We've got the free-for-all up next. We will be right back on Tanagra. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to The Seventh Rule with Ciroc Loft, and this is the free-for-all, finally,
Hello.
With Melissa Longo.
Hiya!
Chris Garris is in the dark. Look at that.
Hello.
Dark of night. Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear, is here. She got cats behind her. Faith Howell is on the Enterprise D bridge. Chris McGee is our resident Dark Lord. Allison Leach Hyde is out in New Mexico with a disco shirt. The Matt Boardman says, I'll see your disco shirt and raise you a USS Titan shirt. Greg Kenzo is out in Hawaii where things are going to get lit. And Chuck A. looks like he's got a Picard shirt. Nice. All right. Jake Sisko guesses the IMDb score.
I've heard this episode talked about a lot. So it has to be a fan favorite. I'm going to say it was like an 8.4. The 84 Olympics.
Does anybody else have any guesses that doesn't already know?
It's got to be at least a 9. I mean, I think it's a 10.
But it's got to go be higher than a 10.
Yeah. No other guesses?
Because I know it, so I'm not going to say anything.
Okay, well, Siroc and Faith got it exact if you average their numbers out. It's an 8.7, everybody. 8.7, yep. Very high rated. Very good episode.
Very okay. High.
What about non-appearance mentions? I didn't catch any. I thought there was going to be one for O'Brien, but then he popped up at the end. That's it. Chris McGee, tell me there's some kind of or some sort of something.
You're in luck. Troy in the observation lounge challenging War Assumption says, you're still assuming this is some kind of challenge ritual.
Yes, that was a sneaky one. All right. Well, Melissa Longo, please, speaking of sneaky, get us started off on the right track by telling us what you thought of Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
I thought Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra was Temba-wise, arms-wise. I love this episode very much. It's probably one of my favorite TNG episodes for several reasons. One is that I think this episode is very Starfleet. It emulates the motto of Starfleet so well in that it seeks out new life and new civilizations and boldly going where no one has gone before. And they definitely have done that with this species. And I love the relationship between Picard and Captain Dathan. It's just wonderful. And I love seeing Picard's curiosity and trying to figure out how to communicate with Dathan and how open Captain Dathan is to communicating with Picard. And he wants Picard to understand. I have to say, Paul Winfield, he was fantastic. Phenomenal performance. To us, it initially seemed like gibberish, but it never felt like he thought he was saying gibberish. I felt like he always knew what he was saying. I love that there's an exploration of language and how it differs from what we're used to, and how when you're translating a foreign language, things get choppy or they get mixed up in a way that we don't normally necessarily understand because grammar is different or lack of grammar is different. And I love that exploration too. There's so many good things about this episode that just, for me, this is a good jumping off point for somebody who's never seen Star Trek before, because it feels like this is what Star Trek is all about.
Good point. It's a good starter one. Well, thank you very much, Melissa Longo, hanging out on set with Paul Winfield and Sir Patty. Chris Garris is here out in Texas. What's up, Chris? What did you think of this episode? First time watching or old favorite?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a good one. Good old favorite. And I like about this episode is because, you know, it actually explores the themes of communication, you know, cultural understanding and cooperation, which again is all of Starfleet and the Federation right there. And, you know, it lets us learn, though, even though Picard and Dathan are not able to actually communicate with each other, they are able to come together to fight that common enemy, which is that being on the planet that's attacking them. You know, kind of the sad thing, though, is that, you know, just as Picard is finally figuring out that they speak in metaphor, literally just as they're about to be attacked, the Enterprise beams them or tries to beam him off the planet, and which leaves Dathan having to fight by himself. Which, of course, you know, he is severely injured and then later succumbs to those injuries. So it just goes to show, this episode goes to show that, you know, if we could actually learn how to communicate with each other, maybe some of the issues that we have today, we could fix instead of, you know, just because I say one thing doesn't mean, you know, maybe you don't understand what I'm saying. You know, we need to stop, understand what we're trying to say. And that's what this episode is really, I feel like, is really hitting home, is that you need to not get mad at it. Because I'll admit, Picard was really getting frustrated at the beginning. And then he finally, you know, stops, rethinks, and listens, is actually listening to what they're trying to say. And guess what? He figures it out. Unfortunately, a little bit too late. You know, some of the more interesting sides of this episode, I was looking on IMDb, and there's the scene when the Enterprise is shooting at the Temarian vessel. That was actually a reused shot from The Best of Both Worlds, because when they were in post-production, they instead of having the phasers coming out of the phaser strips, they came out of the torpedo bay. So, and I was kind of curious. So when I was watching, I went to go back to see if this was and they fixed it when they did the Blu-rays, and this is the Blu-ray version. So now it's just coming out of the right spot. And the last thing I'm going to say about it really is that we've had another Ashley Judd appearance.
Yep.
In this episode. And I was like, oh, that's her. So look, yeah, it's more. Funny.
You might get another one in a month.
I can't remember, but you're probably right. I agree. I bet you're right. But otherwise, it's a good episode. This is one of the few ones I really don't even, I'm not going to have much to say and things left unsaid, because there's really not a lot to say except for, you know, Worf. Once again, he thinks he needs to go to battle, and they're like, no, at the beginning. He's like, they're coming to attack our border. No, Mr. Worf.
Just he's a fighter.
Stand down. So, that's it.
Well, thanks very much, Chris Garris out in Texas. Carrie Schwent, a.k.a. Crafty Bear. What's up? What'd you think of this one?
Like Melissa, this is it's in my top five. I've been waiting to get to this episode since we started TNG. Yeah, this one's like a you pull a warm blanket just out of the oven or out of the dryer and wrap yourself up with it. Just warm fuzzies. Love it very, very much. And Picard, I feel, is perfectly suited for dealing with Dathan. He's got all the right mix of, yeah, he's determined, he's curious, and most of all, he's patient. He was frustrated, but he was still patient in his frustration, if that made, not sure if that made any sense at all. But I really thought he did excellent with it. And some of the times Dathan was saying Shaka when the walls fell, especially when Picard was trying to light his fire, Dathan was laughing when he said it, and that just makes me smile. Or just the way he says it, he's like totally throwing shade at him when he's saying that. And I have a slightly unpopular opinion, I think, in regards to the whole patience and who should or shouldn't, who should, would or wouldn't do very well in this situation. I'll say that for things left unsaid. Because it isn't, I think it's an unpopular opinion, but we'll find out. But the guest stars, we got a Lieutenant J sighting, her in that fantastic hair of hers. I love her haircut. And Ashley Judd's hair was also very, very, very nice. I mean, I believe, if I remember right from looking it up, this was her first acting role. And I thought she did great. But I've been a fan of Paul Winfield for a very, 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 very long time. He did, in 1993, a couple years after this episode, three episodes of the TV miniseries Queen, which was based on a book that Alex Haley wrote as a companion to Roots. Queen was the story of his father's side of the family. And Paul Winfield plays Queen's grandfather. And yeah, love his voice. And also, he is an angel named Sam in the 12 episodes of Touched by an Angel. I could listen to him read like anything. He's got one of those very soothing voices, I feel. And I just love the whole premise of the episode. I feel like I tend to think along the same way of like metaphors and that, because I'm always comparing one situation to, I watch so many things, TV, you know, TV, movies, etc. So I'm always coming up with examples from other things. So I feel like I think kind of along the same way. And I can feel Dathan's frustration because I feel like sometimes I say it, but I'm not sure if anyone's understanding me. But, and I do have a couple of fun facts that I'll also say for things left unsaid that I found amusing. But to wrap up the limerick, I've been working on this one off and on for ages. I've had the first line of it written for over a year, and I've finished it, and it's kind of awesome. I think you'll get the idea, I think, of the theme of it. But here we go. Shakespeare, when his page was blank. Siskel and Ebert, one more in the tank. Edison, his bulb alight. Stephen King, fingers in flight. Damon and Affleck, when all the names were thanked.
Nice. Thank you very much. Carrie Schwent, well worth the wait, the full year of work on that, but kind of had an idea where it was going. You're right. All right. Faith Howell is next. She's on the bridge of the Enterprise D. What do you think of this one, Faith?
I mean, you guys are going to get sick of hearing me say that this season, but I love it. It's definitely top 10. I don't know how I'm going to fit 26 episodes in my top 10, but we'll see how this goes. As an ESL teacher, for those who are unaware, English as a second language is what I do professionally. I teach students who do not speak English at home, either how to speak English if they're newcomers, or how to develop their English up to high school and college level. I love doing it. It is the best job in the world. Sorry to all the rest of you. However, it is like this a lot, especially in the early days. Sometimes students come from mixed backgrounds. Maybe they've had inconsistent schooling, or they just haven't had any exposure to English. And there's this period of, you know, charades and things to try to get our point across. And we'll do very visual things. We'll do hands-on. There's a lot of miming and pointing and things. And, you know, I love this episode for that. I feel like it definitely rings true in that feeling of how do we get our point across? And believe it or not, English is a lot like this language to non-speakers, because we use so many idioms. Even students that have a fairly good grasp of grammar and can converse socially will hit upon idioms that just completely throw them for a loop. And if you don't know what, you know, like a student was completing a worksheet and brought it to me, and it had something about Rose. And I knew, okay, right away, that's Titanic. And he was completely lost because he is 16 and has never seen the movie. So definitely, I love this episode. I've always loved it. I think it's always given me that little linguistic brain tickle and, you know, curiosity about other people. And then now, like I said, you know, I get to do it every day. So it's the best.
Wow. You're the best, Faith Howell. Thank you very much for that. Chris McGee is up next. He's the Dark Lord. He's the best at it. What'd you think of this one?
Thank you, Ryan. Well, it's clearly an iconic episode, of course, that I absolutely love for all the reasons everyone has already said. And it introduces Picard's new swanky suede jacket, a piece of apparel that is almost synonymous with the fifth season. Piggybacking off of what Melissa said, Paul Winfield does a superb job as the Tamarian Captain Dathan, conveying his expressions even through all the heavy makeup and prosthetics. He must have gotten some pointers from Michael Dorn. This is one of those episodes where after the linguistic puzzle is solved, you can pretty much figure out what the Temerians were saying to each other at the beginning of the episode, like on the second viewing. I also love how they show that there are some things the Universal Translator just cannot do. I mean, it's doing its job of translating the Temerian language into English, but it doesn't know that it would also need to translate metaphors, nor would it even know how, and more importantly, when to do so. Well, maybe the AI of our century could do it, but not in the 24th century. I also greatly appreciate the little ritual that Dathan performs at his campfire. Even with no words spoken and no explanation later, its meaning is quite clear. Picard even understands it and is a wonderful little glimpse into the Temerians' religion or mythology. Also, in addition to Jay, we also see Ensign Kellogg joining Worf on the shuttle. And I personally think it's a shame that she wasn't given any lines, as this seemed like the perfect opportunity for her to report on the nacelle's damage or something. Minor note, apparently there are 47 entries in the ship's computer on Darmok. Seems like a conspicuous number to me. Clearly, this episode has no shortage of memorable quotes, but rather than repeat what has probably already been said many times now in the previous segments, I'll choose one a little less memorable this time, which is Riker, after the Temerians have forced the shuttle back to the Enterprise, said, "Nice shooting."
Very good. Thank you so much, Chris McGee. I had no idea where you're going to go with that. I thought you were going to say like one of the Temerian quotes, but you're right. You went in a different direction. Allison Leach Hyde, what is up? What'd you think of this one?
I have always liked this episode, and probably because of the scene where Picard is telling Dathan the story while he's dying. And because who doesn't want Patrick Stewart to tell them a story beside a campfire? So, you know, as a kid, I loved that scene because, I mean, Patrick is truly engaged. Like, he's having a great time. I thought it really showed Picard's personality, which is great because he's like, I don't have to be the captain right now. I'm helping somebody through something. And this is the only way we could communicate is through stories. And so always love that. And I also really, really like when we get Data and Troy working out a problem together. And I thought this was a great use of Troy's character because it made sense. Like, she can, you know, she can sense what they're feeling. Like, do they have bad intentions, good intentions? So it was like, it was really helpful. And of course, I always think it's so cool to have the non-emotional one and the emotional one working together and how well they work together. So love that together. Little sad Beverly didn't have much to do in this episode. I don't know how they could have fixed that, but I would have liked to see more Beverly. And I did like that this time when Picard shut Worf down saying we're not, you know, going straight into battle, he said, but thank you for your, whatever the line was, but like, thank you for your vigilance. Like, you're doing your job. I know I shut you down every episode, but you're doing your job. You're doing great. So I really like that he took that little bit of time to let Worf know, no, you're doing a good job, even if I told you no for the 100th time to go straight to battle station. So enjoy this episode. Made my entire family watch it today. So it was great.
Oh, fun. Did they like it?
They seem to be paying attention more than they tend to when I'm doing my homework. So yeah.
All right. Thank you very much, Allison Leach Hyde. Chuck A, aka TNG Fanatic. What's up? What'd you think of this one?
Well, this has always been one of my favorite episodes. Paul Winfield, like people have said, was wonderful in there. His acting with the metaphors was terrific. I was looking for meta fives, but I think that was asking too much. it was good to see Ashley Judd, because I know she's coming up here soon in another episode. I'm going to go a little on a different subject here, since everybody's kind of hit what I was going to say. But the Playmates made a Dathan figure, action figure, and they reissued it with a what was called a space cap pog, but they only shipped the figure to Australia and the UK, and I believe there was only about 1,000 of them made. And I was looking in the episode to see if I could see that action figure, and I didn't. But if the action figure sells for around $1,000, so Dathan has one of the rarest action figures that Playmates made, is because they didn't ship it to the U.S. They only shipped it abroad. But going back to the episode, I would like to have seen some sort of sequel to the episode to see, you know, if the Temerians got into the Federation or Picard revisited the planet, stuff like that. But, you know, there were so many, they went somewhere else with this, the rest of the fourth season, the fifth season and such, with the Klingons and other subjects. But it was always one of my favorite episodes. I was so glad to actually view it again. It's been a while since I had seen it.
It's a popular one. Thank you very much, Chuck A. So good to see you again. All right, Greg Kenzo out in Hawaii. Yeah. Do your worst. What do you think of this one?
I know. This one I loved, so I'm not going to be doing any bad talking about episodes that are universally loved. But, you know, this one I would say is the most unique episode of Star Trek. That's just my opinion. It has something to it that, I mean, this just rings of explorers back way back when on Earth, not in the galaxy, and they were like when they encountered a new, not species of people, a new race, a new language. This is exactly what they would have to deal with. I mean, not, it's just tweaked slightly, I guess you could say. The universal translator takes that away. And so basically, this is the way to tell that story of those explorers, meeting new people, encountering new languages. And yeah, I love that they do it. And they literally say the theme of this episode right in the beginning. I think Picard says communication is a matter of patience and imagination. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Greg Kenzo out in Hawaii, everybody. All right. The Matt Boardman in his USS Titan shirt. What did you think of this episode on your 19th view?
Times three, maybe. What a great episode. You know, as I was watching it today, it reminded me of when I watched it growing up. And, you know, it was always Next Generation in syndication, obviously. For me, it was Saturdays at, I think, 7 o'clock on a CBS station in Michigan, right? And I was kind of transported back to that time. And one of the things that I love about Star Trek from the 90s is, you know, obviously we had longer seasons and we had such a wide variety of episode types, right? We had silly episodes. We had episodes that, you know, some people say should never be watched again. We have episodes that are like this one here, where it talks about that connection. You know, that we can relate to, that is a metaphor for us as the human race. I mean, it made me think about, you know, when people started speaking different languages and the first time that they meet up, and I've always wondered this. It's like, how did we decipher languages and have that ability to be able to speak to each other and have it make sense and understand? I mean, because we're, you know, prime example here, you know, they spoke in metaphors, and we too, in some ways, every culture has their different metaphors and things mean different things in different languages. And just a quick funny story. I learned a little bit of Spanish, and at one point I said to a friend of mine, I said, "Oh, buena chica," right? And in my To me, I was just being funny and being like, oh, good girl. But then she and one of my other friends laughed so hard at me because saying buena chica to somebody in Spanish means something completely different. Like, it's like you're like, hey, how you doing? So I appreciate this episode for things like that. And for things left unsaid, I'd love to talk about what this story premise originally
Ooh.
started off at, because that is zany, let me tell you. But love this episode. It is star this is Star Trek at its best, in talking about those connections between people. And we got to see it with two heavy hitters between Patrick and Paul, and they really just knocked it out of the park, making this a fan favorite.
Bueno, Chico, Matt. All right, thank you. It's time for Jake's final take. Sirach, any final thoughts on this episode?
A couple of final thoughts. I mean, I liked the episode. One of the lines that I liked was when Patrick Stewart delivered the line where he said, he was quoting Gilgamesh, and he says, "He who was my companion through adventure and hardship is gone forever." I thought he delivered that line very well, and it was kind of hit an emotional button when he said it to me. I thought of my own losses or potential losses in life. I thought it was interesting that they chose black actors to be the Temerians in this episode, mostly cast black actors to wear the makeup. It's a decision, it's a choice, it's something that is consciously done. So I thought it was an interesting one. We've seen it before in other situations, for example, with the Jem'Hadar. But even with the Jem'Hadar, they did cast other people who were non-black to play Jem'Hadar, so it wasn't exclusively. But this one seemed to be more exclusive. The other thing was, I like the final shot of Picard looking out of the window, holding that blade, I think he was holding, and I thought it was a great shot. It reminded me of the DS9 final shot, pulling back out of the window, looking out. So that was great. That little metal book that Picard found, I didn't understand how that would be relevant considering that there was already a communication gap. I don't see how he'd be able to read, either read Temerian, because I'm sure the alphabet would be different, right? And the metaphors themselves would still, it still wouldn't give you insight. So I just didn't see how that would give him an upper hand or advantage. But I did like the book itself and the way it was designed by the art department. I thought it was cool and something that I would like to have. If I was going to buy something at an auction, it would be probably something small and cool looking like that. And then I guess lastly, I thought of some of what would be my way of communicating in some of these circumstances. And I would say, for example, to somebody, "Jordan and Pippin in Chicago." And you would have to kind of get what that meant, right? And without knowing, you're like kind of lost. But then the last one I thought of was Jake and Nog on the promenade.
Feet dangling.
So you got to figure it out. What does that mean? But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this episode. I thought it was very creative. The performances were fantastic. Paul Winfield's a great actor, and I've loved him in other things I've seen him in. And he played a perfectly good counterbalance to Picard in this episode.
Great. That's it for us, everybody. The legendary episode, Darmok, is coming to a close. Unless you are a patron, then you're going to hear us ramble on and babble on. Ramble on, isn't that a Led Zeppelin song?
Yes, indeed.
Great. And so if not, though, everybody, we'll see you next time. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thank you to Chuck A, Greg Kenzo, the Matt, Allison, Chris, Faith, Carrie, Chris Garris, Melissa for myself, Siroc, Melissa Longo, and Aaron Eisenberg. Thank you all so much for hanging out with us. We will see you next time. And until then, always remember the seventh rule.